We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the news quiz. We start with a headline from the BBC News website, read for you by Corey Caulfield.
Bankrupt goalkeeper to auction balls.
And our thanks to all those who sent that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Andrew Maxwell. And opposite them on my left, Sunday Times journalist Camilla Long and Andy Hamilton. Who doesn't want to give people the right to roam?
Theresa May, who is sort of burnishing her leadership credentials, is in a fight with Sajid Javid. And Sajid Javid is Osborne's protege, and Osborne also wants to lead the Conservative Party. And so rather than do it himself, he said, "I don't like that, Theresa. Make her go away." And so what's happened is Sajid Javid wants there to be mobile reception available all over the country, which would involve roaming like happens when you're abroad where your phone just finds the nearest mast. And the police say you can't do that because what would happen is we wouldn't be able to track people properly because there are these black spots in Cornwall where there is no mobile reception. And, of course, all the terrorists are now in Cornwall. There's a huge ISIS pasty shop there. And so the police are saying, no, don't do that. And Theresa May is saying, no, don't do that. And there are all these columns appearing by sort of fusty Luddites saying that they're glad. They're glad you can't. I, for one, am glad that there are some corners of England unconnected to the world of modern technology. The other day I was at one of my homes, a cottage that, that nestles at the foot of Bodmin Moor and is blissfully unconnected to mobile reception or broadband. After a morning playing the harpsichord to my falcon, I decided to go for a bracing yomp upon the moor and stumbled upon a couple in some distress, the kind of urbanites who came unstuck so deservedly in the film Deliverance, that magnificent celebration of rural life. The female of the species plaintively cried, "My husband is having a heart attack. Please help us. Do you have a mobile phone?" No attempt to engage in conversation with me. She merely wanted to engage with the health and safety fanatics of the NHS. "No, I do not," I retorted. "I suggest you let nature do its course. The crows and magpies will take care of his eyes and the rest of him will compost down nicely in the coming months."
You can hear part two of the afternoon drama.
Sometimes you need a phone, because some of us have people in our lives that we care about and who care about us.
Yeah, but didn't the Culture Secretary unveil these plans after David Cameron complained of patchy phone reception in Cornwall?
Is that probably his aide trying to spare his feelings? Because he doesn't realise how unpopular he is.
Ah.
So he says, "You know, I haven't had a call all day." They go, "Oh, yeah, that's your phone. Yeah, there's no reception round here."
What I'm really concerned about is that Theresa May is relying on terrorists' phones to fail. And you sort of think, there's a lot of terrorists in Cornwall or wherever it is, and she's just waiting for them to go, "Ah, no, I can't talk to Iran," and like that. And for it to collapse in that way, surely it should be slightly more sophisticated than that.
Well, I think she might be right. I mean, Afghanistan has terrible phone reception, and you see from the news there's never any bombs there. I mean, that works terribly well. So. But do you not think we should try and move all terrorists back to the old-fashioned pen and paper? I mean, yeah. It seems to me if it would reduce the number of death threats, because by the time you've actually found a pen and then you've got an envelope, you know, which hasn't got a window in it, yeah, and you've dug
Seven
out the right... Yes, and find a post office that's still open.
It's too easy to issue a death threat these days. Just tweet away. You know, the old school. You have to get all the newspapers, cut them out.
Yeah.
Really think it through. Yeah. You know, I want you to hate me and love arts and crafts.
Yeah. But by the time you've stuck all that Pritt stick, right, all that thing, honestly, your murderous rage has dissipated, I would imagine.
It is, or really consolidated.
Yeah.
People and their bleeding opinions on Twitter. I tell you, if every tweet cost a stamp, they'd have a whole lot less opinions.
Home Secretary Theresa May has warned that the Culture Secretary Sajid Javid's plan to improve mobile phone reception and eradicate so-called not spots could have a negative impact on law enforcement. Her desire to keep potential terrorists offline is founded on personal experience. She was very nearly radicalised recently after spending an hour talking with BT customer service. Most knot spots are in rural areas, so terrorists may now turn their attention to bombing the countryside. It's certainly easier to blend in there, as everyone else is buying bags of fertiliser too. 2 points to Jeremy. Andrew, who's left home after a falling out?
Oh, this is Norman Baker. Mm. The Lib Dem has... He's walked away from his job with Theresa May. He said being with Theresa May was like walking through mud. When I first read that, I thought, did he mean that he left his shoe in her?
Can we just stop while everybody gets that image out of their heads?
No, maybe he means it as in working with Theresa May is like going to Glastonbury in that sense of walking through mud. You know, when you first go to the Home Office to work with Theresa May, it seems like a good idea. And then after 2 days, you lose all your friends. He said, he's the Lib Dem dude. And he said that the Home Office is too conservative and that's why he's left. He said, this is outrageous. These conservatives, they're lunatics. They live in the past. I'm going back to my constituency, which is Lewis, where they still burn the Pope.
Alex Salmond, didn't they burn Alex?
They were going to burn Alex Salmond, but he was too damp.
Wasn't it because she wouldn't legalise drugs or something like that?
Yeah,
Wasn't it because she...
The report, she wouldn't pay attention.
She wouldn't go along with his plans to make it totally legal.
Mm-hmm. Like they did in Portugal almost 15 years ago and nothing happened except for a massive decrease in drug use.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't want to do that. That would be madness. So what we need to do is keep it just the way it is.
Norman Baker, I mean, he does seem a slightly odd cove because he wrote a book claiming that David Kelly was murdered by the security services. Now, the security services answer to the Home Office. So it must have been an odd breakfast table conversation the morning he got that appointment. You know, great news, darling, I've got a job at the Home Office. Oh, aren't they the lot you said were a bunch of murderers? Yeah, but the owls are good.
Does anybody know what, you know, people always say, I'm giving up to go and be with my family, I'm giving up to go and be... Does anybody know what he wants to do?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
He's in the world of rock and roll, like all bald men in their 50s.
Yep. He wants to spend more time on his musical career as lead singer and songwriter with his band, The Reform Club. They previously released a single called Piccadilly Circus. We would play you a clip of it, but I'm not that vindictive. Oh, no, wait a minute, I am. Hang on, let's just have a quick listen.
People rushing everywhere, they're passing by and they don't care. Piccadilly Circus, Piccadilly Circus, don't complain. Piccadilly Circus, it's cold again. Don't get caught in the rain.
I'll just repeat those lyrics for you. It goes, Piccadilly Circus, don't complain. Piccadilly Circus, it's cold again. Don't get caught in the rain. It's not just a pop song. It's also extremely sensible advice. You know, for anybody of a certain age. Very good.
I remember his classic, The Height of July, use sun cream and always wear a hat.
But it was extraordinary, because one of the things about Norman Baker that I like is he believes that UFOs exist. That's one of his big things. He's quite a conspiracy theory person.
Oh, mate, I was reading only this week, it was on the BBC News website, about Europe's only official UFO spotting agency is within the French Space Agency. They're based out of Grenoble.
Right.
Right. This is pure French, right? And I quote, they said, we get over like 20,000 inquiries a year, but we deal with the time wasters by making them fill out an 11-page form.
The problem with people who are into UFOs is that they will fill out an 11-page form.
Oh,
and more.
Oh, I made a program
with them. If I'd seen a UFO, I would fill out an 11-page form,
to be fair. I made a program with them. You know, these people actually, the people I made the program with genuinely believe in the alien invasion. Like, I do believe in UFOs, but that's not hard to do. That is an unidentified flying object. This is all it takes to believe in one of them. Look at that over there. I don't know what that is. There's no need to start a website.
I once interviewed a man. He worked in the post room at the Birmingham Mail. Perhaps he worked in the mail room at the Birmingham Post. I can't remember. But one of those two things. And I said, what do you do on your holidays? He said, well, I deprogram people who have been abducted by aliens. And I said, well, what do your friends think about that? And he said, well, I'd prefer nobody to know. And I just wanted to say, I'm interviewing you on live radio. My favourite news story, the Lib Dems have appointed a new whip in the House of Lords. This is so childish of me. Do you know what this person
is
called?
Yes, Lady Garden. You should be ashamed of yourself, Sandy Toxvic. I thought I'd put 50 quid at Ladbrokes on her mentioning that.
I hope she's allowed to do things her way, regardless of the procedures. I just love the idea that somewhere in Parliament there's a lady garden running wild. Liberal Democrat MP Norman Baker has resigned as a Home Office Minister, complaining of constant battles with Home Secretary Theresa May. After serving for 4.5 years as a minister in the Conservative Lib Dem coalition, Baker has now stepped down to spend more time with his principals. Some of his colleagues think Baker has been too hasty in leaving the government now rather than at the next election like the rest of them. Clegg has praised Baker as an outstandingly effective Lib Dem minister, saying that on many occasions he came phenomenally close to achieving something. 2 points to Andrew. Camilla, which breakdown is proving taxing for the Treasury?
This is the initiative by George Osborne to send breakdowns of taxes to 24 million voters. And I think the idea is that you receive a pie chart so that you know exactly how much you are paying towards your bins and how much you're paying towards your education. I'd really like quite a detailed report of exactly where my taxes go, to
everything.
Be honest with you. Absolutely everything. That policeman over there, I'd like to know exactly how much.
Do you think there could be an app for that? You could, like, you put your phone up to a policeman and you'd know.
Yes.
£4.50.
Yeah, exactly. I'm always quite fascinated that the royals cost us sort of 50p each a year, and I'd like to know exactly how much of my money is going towards Prince Charles that particular week, how much of...
Yeah, you could put a meter on them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is propaganda, really, isn't it? Because what is really crafty about it is the fact that the biggest bit of the pie is just listed under welfare, which in tabloid speak will mean unemployment benefit. But, I mean, you know, includes pensions and child benefit. And
that section just said scum, didn't it?
Yeah. Also, it costs £5 million. I'm not sure it's worth £5 million.
Is there a slice of the pie which indicates how much of your taxes are going towards this very letter?
Yeah. Maybe it'll come monthly, with, you know, and with a binder to collect and enjoy.
Start getting something for it. So a person earning £30,000 a year contributes £534 to the defence budget. But that's quite a lot. I would think that definitely gives you a go in a submarine. Surely that's...
It did work. I mean, in tactical terms, obviously what Osborne was aiming to do was to try and square up a lot of support. It did work for him because all the right-wingers steamed in. Farage steamed... At least I think it was Farage. I couldn't see him behind his poppy. What, did you see the size of Farage's poppy?
He looked like he was supposed to lie down in front of the Tower of London.
Yeah. Well, it was like a sort of huge red triffid was attacking him. It's extraordinary.
Wasn't his mum getting her kit off recently?
Really?
Yeah
Farage's mother is getting naked in the Daily Mail.
Why?
No, for charity.
No, she did it for charity about sort of 6 years ago. And there are lots of pictures of Nigel Farage's mother sort of naked, standing behind a big tractor pulling a thing like that. And then she's covered in body paint, posing with a bouquet. And my favourite is her posing naked as one of the three kings, three wise men.
Seriously?
Yes. It's the weirdest thing. She's holding a little box of gold and then boobs and then sort of some headdress. She's got a crown on and pearls around her neck.
So how do you raise money for charity? Is it you give money and she puts her clothes back on? Because I'm suddenly thinking of the most nauseating nativity play you can imagine. Right?
So, and there was she sort of had this kind of like slightly simpering look on her face as she offered a box of gold with her sort of big WI baps.
Were they?
She had sandwiches as well.
Are there two other WI bapped endowed kings?
Yes, there were. There was
there are three naked kings bringing gifts to our saviour.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
None of them have the paperwork to be here.
Do you know what puzzles me about Farage? This is Achilles heel. I'm just amazed no one's sort of targeted it. He presents himself as this great, authentic Englishman. So why is it Farage?
He's Huguenot.
Yeah, I know.
He's Huguenot. He's a French Huguenot. His family came from continental Europe to this country for safety.
Yeah, but we got loads of French surnames, haven't we? And they get anglicised. He should be Nigel Farage.
Yeah. Well, it's like Toxvig. It's actually Toxvig, but we don't say that in England because it's too complicated.
He should be Nigel, or if he wants to do the Huguenot thing, it should be Nigel Farage. we should make him wear the beret and the, you know...
HMRC have begun sending out annual tax breakdowns to... What the hell did we get to a naked woman? HMRC have begun sending out annual tax breakdowns to every UK taxpayer detailing where their income tax and national insurance contributions go. For example, a person earning £30,000 a year contributes roughly £1,300 to the NHS, £400 to defence and £2 to the cost of sending out annual tax breakdown letters. The amount spent on the EU by someone earning £15,000 is just £15. But if, like David Cameron, you earn £142,000, it's a rather less manageable £1.7 billion. Plus interest. The Chancellor, George Osborne, hailed the letters sent to taxpayers as a revolution in transparency, until an aide pointed out that those envelopes with the little windows in them had been around for ages. 2 points to Camilla. Andy, have a listen to this. Andy, who can't duck the nation's verdict?
Oh, well, this is the world's most expensive by-election, midterm elections in the distant United States. And there's been a massive victory for the Republicans, which means that Barack Obama is basically now a caretaker president because the Republican majority are not going to allow him to... Well, they'll let him lock up. And maybe clean the toilets and sort the post. But they'll be pretty intent on stopping him doing anything else if they can. And they had such a good night, apparently, because there's widespread disillusion in America with Barack Obama. Because even though he was the first black president, the feeling is that he's made exactly all the same cock-ups as the white presidents did, only with a little bit more charisma. But anyway, he is now saddled with a lot of sort of fairly crazy cookies to deal with, including a woman called Joni Ernst. She did this extraordinary campaign ad.
Well, we actually have it. Shall we have a quick listen?
Yeah, yeah.
Have a listen to this.
I'm Joni Ernst. I grew up castrating hogs on an Iowa farm. When I get to Washington, I'll know how to cut pork.
Joni Ernst, mother, soldier, conservative.
My parents taught us to live within our means. It's time to force Washington to do the same. To cut wasteful spending, repeal Obamacare, and balance the budget. I'm Joni Ernst, and I approve this message because Washington's full of big spenders. Let's make them squeal.
She sold herself as a pig castrator.
Yeah.
And she won. Yeah. God bless America.
But what she never explained in the ad is why they castrated the pigs. I mean, was it a hobby? Or what was it? Did they not have a television or, you know,
The Bay of Pigs incident, it was all to do with that.
She had another campaign ad where she was firing a handgun at pretty much everything, including Obamacare. And I think the voiceover says, watch her unload at Obamacare and she never misses and all this. And you thought it's a little bit tasteless for a country that's lost a few presidents to the bullet. I mean, I don't know why she didn't just go the whole hog and have it filmed standing on a grassy knoll.
Well, it's actually even worse for the Democrats. The Republicans have their highest majority since the 1940s. So the Democrats were absolutely spanked yesterday. But at the exact same time, all over America, in what are called balloted initiatives, the mini referendum, state by state, every state in the union voted for actually left-wing things, voted for Democratic policy. So there were states that voted for legalization of marijuana, raising the minimum wage, guaranteeing women's fertility rights, gun control. All these actually left-wing Democratic policies they wanted, but didn't want the party. I mean, just it's doubly insulting, isn't it? Like, we want your ideas.
Yeah, we'll have
just,
what you stand for.
Just not you.
Yeah.
I believe it's called the Miliband effect.
Yeah,
have you noticed that there's another member of the Bush family, the family that keeps on giving?
Yeah.
George P. Bush, who is the grandson of the first President Bush. He's just won his first election. The P stands for Prescott. The prestige. And my favourite person who got elected, 18-year-old Republican Sarah Blair, became the USA's youngest state commissioner. I love her. She was endorsed by the National Rifle Association. Always fun. Opposes abortion rights. She wants to drug test people who receive public assistance, and she opposes gay marriage. And the best thing is, she has announced she would like to team up with George P. Bush. That is Blair and Bush.
What could possibly go wrong?
Nothing. But all the dynasties were represented, weren't they? Because there was a Clinton, there was a Bush, there was a Kennedy. And, of course, the next election is going to probably be a runoff between Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush. So, for us, that would be the equivalent of the next election being between Cherie Blair and Mark Thatcher.
It is worrying, this dynastic thing. I mean, imagine if our head of state was just the idiot descendant of a previous head of state.
Never happened here.
No. President Obama was left isolated this week after the Republicans gained control of the Senate in the US midterm elections. The president will now find his power to pass legislation extremely limited during his remaining 2 years in office. Both Obama and the Republicans say they wish to find common ground. And once they've found this common ground, they'll change its regime and exploit its mineral resources. Obama rejected claims he'd become a lame duck, saying, "I'm confident I'm going to be pretty busy for the next few years." And, of course, he's right. The Barack Obama Presidential Library isn't going to choose its own wallpaper. 2 points to Andy. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Andrew have got 4 points, but so, too, have Camilla and Andy. We start round two with the description for a show in the Telford Oaken Gates Theatre's autumn programme.
Get ready for Adonis. Saucy, sexy and seductive, the original and longest-running male glamour show in the UK. Tickets £22.50 includes 50 pence handling fee.
And our thanks to Charles King for sending us that. Jeremy, who's taking too many of the tablets?
The Academy of something, something, something. Something to do with the NHS. The body's done a report. And
The Academy of Medical Royal Colleges.
That thing. Has said that the NHS is wasting £2 billion a year, but it says it's wasting it on things like needless x-rays. And you think, well, thing is, until you've done the x-ray, it's hard to tell. I mean, that's the good thing about tests. I mean, when you get your results back and there's a relief, you know, the doctor says, very good news, I'm very glad to tell you, you've got the all clear. He doesn't say, well, that test was a complete bloody waste of time. You turn up here presenting all these symptoms consistent with something very serious, but oh no, well, just go back to your house and be well. Well, we've spent money on a load of tests on you. Thanks for nothing, healthy boy. So yeah, but it's basically that. But there is over-prescription of anti. I'm trying. I don't take antibiotics. I try very hard not to.
You're
take
not.
Which is why I'm constantly ill. But yeah, we take too many antibiotics.
But how would you work out who needs an x-ray? I've got an idea about this, because I think it's only one in five people in a waiting room actually need x-rays. What you do is you release a bear into the waiting room and then x-ray the ones who couldn't run away. But the weird one, this thing, one of the things they said was it's a doctor's duty to prevent waste, OK? Which includes better use of operating theatres. Now...
Shows, put shows
shadow
on.
Shadow puppets.
They're not used in the evening much, when theatres are usually full, if you look around the West End.
But the one that really worried me was that they were going to be using email and Skype a lot more. Instead of actually seeing people, they were going to be diagnosing over email or something like
type?
That. Which seemed... yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just put your symptoms on Facebook and see how many likes it gets.
Yeah.
But the government are always doing this to the doctors. They're always saying, I'll spend less money. But they also, in the same breath, want them to do more doctoring. And they'll bribe them. They'll say, we'll give you £50 if you diagnose people with dementia. And they've got this thing now, the midlife MOT, where the idea is that middle-aged people go in and they have a complete, thorough medical check in case there is something wrong with them. Well, in the good old days, you didn't know if there was anything wrong with you. You just dropped dead. Everyone was happy.
What the NHS needs to do is just say, look, just give us the bleeding money. We know how much money it needs. It needs 30 billion. They can sort of say, oh, but maybe if doctors didn't wear pants, we could save a bit there. Just give them the bleeding money they need. It's our health that's at stake.
But there is a lot of unnecessary spending. Every time I have the flu jab, which I have because I have asthma, I have the flu jab, the nurse always gives me a Postman Pat says, well done sticker. And frankly, I sob while she does the jabbing, so I don't deserve it, so it's
I didn't have the flu jab. I took the option of the prostate exam instead.
What, you went in with flu symptoms and said, I want a prostate examination, please?
I just lost my keys. I thought, I'm not looking up there. I've got to find somebody who's prepared to.
The Academy of Medical Royal Colleges has released a report claiming that the NHS wastes over £2 billion a year on unnecessary x-rays, drugs and treatments. The report says that doctors should be less ready to prescribe a cocktail of drugs to older people, as traditional gin-based cocktails work just as well. It's important to look out for the early signs of dementia, which include putting your glasses in the dishwasher, your car keys in the fridge, or Jeremy Hunt in charge of the Department of Health. 2 points to Jeremy. Andrew, which recipe book is half-baked?
Oh, yes, this is ISIS. The Islamic State have brought out a cookbook for women.
Don't you love it when the news quiz writes itself? I didn't know this. It's a jihadist's wife's duty to provide battle snacks. Handy-sized snacks, and the ones they suggest are made with butter, dates and millet flour that your holy warrior can eat on the go. What's wrong with a lion bar and a bag of quavers, eh?
There was an interview with some people from the Islamic State complaining that a lot of the Western kids who were going to fight for them, who are more than willing to blow themselves up, more than willing to kill people, but won't eat the local food.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're jihadis, but they won't eat foreign muck. It's a major problem. They were going in the cities they hold with their foreign fighters that they insist on having pizza and chips. But there's just too much coverage about Islamic State. Like, we're literally giving them the oxygen of publicity. The British media is obsessed with IS the way the Irish media is obsessed with Roy Keane. Who is another bearded lunatic who's quite likely to blow up at any given moment.
They have some dodgy policies, but if you look at this recipe, they make exceedingly good cakes. The Zora Foundation, the women's wing of the self-proclaimed Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, or ISIS, has launched an online cookbook for jihadist wives to help their battling husbands. One chapter is thought to be entitled, You Say Hostage, I Say Guest. Most mujahideen follow a version of the Atkins diet, which involves avoiding all carbohydrates, processed foods and rational thought. One recipe consists of date balls, even though the name is made up of one thing which is banned by ISIS and another which will be cut off if you disobey them. 2 points to Andrew. Camilla, have a listen to this.
I just breathed water in. I forgot that I was land-based. Oh, Lord. Oh, how I wish I was with my fellow porpoises right now.
See, I told you, Camilla, honestly, seriously. This is Andrew being quite calm, just explaining to you. So just imagine, just listen to that, down.
Yes, I've done it, yeah.
Camilla, who's sliding back down the greasy pole?
This is one of these reports that have come out, which, again, just basically says things are getting worse. Mm. There's not much more to it, apart from the fact that things are getting worse for people. I think an Oxford University thing said that social mobility was everybody's mobile as ever, but people are mostly moving down.
Do you think that's true? Do you think it's true? I mean, is that true? I mean, I'm upwardly mobile, I have to say. I'm exactly half an inch taller than my father, so...
What what they said was what had happened was that there was this, like, huge explosion in the kind of the management entrepreneurial, the top of society. And now that's all filled up with people who have been upwardly mobile. The only way to go is down. And that's what's happening.
So, well, you can't move up because there is no up.
There's no room at the top.
What we need is social mobility scooters.
Yes.
You just sit there and it takes you through the classes. And if you've got enough battery, you end up a duke.
Well, most people on mobility scooters don't worry whether there's somebody in their way. That's the main thing. Well, I have nearly been killed outside the fresh fish area in Waitrose by a woman on a mobility scooter, so...
No, I know. I've had to run alongside me dad. They're terrors. They're...
Yeah.
My dad's goes so fast that he actually has to... It's actually licensed. It's actually has to write off to Swansea for a tax disc for it.
Does he wear a helmet?
No, he just doesn't care anymore. He's like Marlon Brando in The Wild One. He's 88 years old. He's living on the edge.
I grew up in Oxford, and there was a man who always had a mobility scooter, and he would thunder down the high street, like sort of pushing into people and everything like that. And as he receded, you saw he had a number plate on the back, which was "Bum to You." Yeah, professor of moral philosophy.
That's actually a shop that sells prosthetic buttocks. It's next to Carphone Warehouse.
I'm going to give an extra point. If anybody can tell me, why is the north going south?
Oh, I know.
Yes?
There's a huge migration because of the collapse of the old industries. I don't know what they did up there, but they were very good with their hands, I'm told. Mining fish and so forth. But what's happened is, because of the collapse of those old industries, northerners are moving down to England, to south of England. I just missed out two words. I'm not very well. I missed out two words. Northern people are...
I'll tell you right now, there's a clog being thrown at a radio. How dare you?
That was incredible, Andrew. It was as though you were in the room. No, what's happening is northern people are moving down to south of England, and this will put Farage in tears because he'll be on trains and people will be speaking with northern accents. And it's not just an economic thing that they might undercut wages. It's about a way of life being challenged. Northerners coming down here with their good sense of humour and their friendliness, undermining our dreary, stoical, miserable southern ways.
It is weird, that friendliness thing. My wonderful wife, Debbie, we go for a walk. She says hello to everybody. They could be somebody with a knife. I don't know what is wrong with you.
That's very disarming, though. The best thing you can do is if someone comes towards you with, you know, like with a weird sort of mask and a machete, say, "Are you right, love? Looking quite pale. Are you eating properly?" And then they calm down, you see.
Because there is another interpretation you can put on these statistics, I think, of a quarter of northerners coming south, which is that northerners are going soft. Oh. And they just can't hack it in the north anymore. Oh. You know, that they can't... Oh, hello.
I think the answer is you should just give the north of England to Scotland. As far down as they say I. Which is around sort of Derby, is when they stop saying I and start saying yes. I think that is actually Scotland. Yeah?
Okay.
That's just... They're a different people, they're a different breed, you see. All them northerners, they were once under Dane law.
Yeah, and that was that things were at their best, frankly.
You're all under Dane law. That's what they say in Yorkshire, they say, "Ay up." It's Norse for "say up," which means "watch out."
Good Lord.
It's a warning rather than a greeting. It's a bit chilling, isn't it?
But it is. I read it in a pamphlet.
This is true. In Newcastle, they say "ganyem" means "go home," and that's Old Norse for "go home."
Yeah.
And that shows the pitiful level of resistance that the so-called hard Geordies put up. Was to stand on the banks of the Tyne with a phrase book, asking them to leave in their own language.
Hey, you can't fight them. They've got courts. I can't see that man's nipple. I can't see his nipple. I can't even see anybody's nipple here. What are they wearing? They're wearing clothes.
Anyway, I have to say it's not true for the whole of the north. Cheshire, Harrogate and York buck the trend. I've been there. They've got a Waitrose, so...
There's rich parts all across the north of England.
Yeah.
And it's narrower. So if you're on one coast, you can get over to the other coast pretty quickly. That's something. I don't know if you've ever looked at your island, but it's essentially an isosceles triangle.
Yeah.
You know? That's something.
Thank you for your help, Andrew.
Thanks. You know, but instead of building this whole HS2, we don't need to get to Birmingham quicker.
No.
They could do a connecting the cities up north to each other. Have you ever actually, like, anybody, we've toured, you've toured. You know,
if you
try and get from Manchester to Leeds, which is in distance, the same distance from one end to the other end of the central line, like, it takes years.
Yeah.
You've got to hack across a bogland. You have to go through something called Snake Pass. It's literally, it's just like 20-odd miles over a damp hill, but, like, it's... Ha! A man with a crooked eye meets you and you've got to get on a pony and throw salt in the locals' eyes and... How about connect the north up to each other?
That is true, because I remember when I toured that particular part of the country, my chauffeur tutted the whole way. According to a report from the University of Oxford, people are beginning to move down rather than up the ladder of social mobility as the number of professional and managerial jobs begins to stagnate. The report disappointed David Cameron, a man who, until it was published, had thought that social mobility was what happens when all the men swap seats after the main course. Seven classes of employment assessed by the study ranged from higher managers and professionals all the way down at the bottom to routine occupations, which I think means the choreographers on Strictly. 2 points to Camilla. Andy, who's not expected to know the ropes?
Oh, this is about scouts. Mm. And I was very pleased to see this story. I was a scout. I love the scouts. Scouts was great. It was like being in the Hitler Youth, only without the Nazism bit. And I was a proper scout. You know, I had shorts and a woggle, and I could tie knots. You know, I could tie sheep shanks and sheep bends and clovitches and bowlins. You know, and I had badges. You couldn't see my arm for badges. I had a house orderly badge. I had to boil an egg. I had woodsman's badge. I made a bivouac out of sticks and leaves. Get £90,000 for one of them in central London. I was clean in thought, word and deed. Apart from when I was watching The Avengers. It was fantastic. And the problem now is that they've done away with all the practical stuff and these things like PR and circus skills. But I learned a lot in the scouts. I learned about leadership because I was leader of the Bull Patrol, oddly enough. And I had to take them on a night hike on Box Hill, me and six kids, right? And I got them completely and totally lost. And I never let on once. Right? All the brambles and the nettles, I just pretended that was part of some master plan. I just bluffed and I bullshitted, and I haven't stopped since. So I think it's sad if the scouts are losing touch with all those sort of pioneering skills.
I'm amazed you can have a badge in public relations. I mean, well, not as amazed as I am that you can have a career in it, but it's the knot. They can't tie knots anymore, isn't it?
No, I know. Which, I mean, I've used all those. Not every day in my life, you know, I don't think I've written a single script without having to tie a sheep shank.
Oh, yes?
I had the most, actually, probably one of the most important filmic moments of my life when I was in the scouts, because we went to an international jamboree in Sweden when I was about 14 and a half. And we were quite excited, hadn't been abroad much, it was in the middle of Sweden. What we didn't know was that in Sweden, girls are scouts as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing the washing up one day, sort of scraping all the mud out of the billy cans and stuff, and the Girl Scouts had been having their sort of big campfire-y thing, and I'm doing the washing up, and I look up the hill, and walking towards me, I like to think in slow motion, it wasn't in slow motion, but walking towards me were about 400 blonde Swedish girls. Sorry, what were we talking about?
This is like a made-up letter in a porn mag. Imagine my surprise. I couldn't believe my luck.
It was an important emotional moment for me.
The Scout Association says scouting leaders are no longer expected to know how to tie knots and that expertise in youth work is more important. The news triggered outrage from the sorts of people who spend their entire lives waiting for this sort of thing to happen so they can be outraged by it. This announcement is thought by many to be the biggest threat to traditional scouting since the introduction of the CRB check. Former scout and best-selling children's author G.P. Taylor said the founder of the Scouts, Lord Baden-Powell, would be spinning in his grave, incidentally allowing him to qualify for his weaving and handcrafting. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they would like to share?
This was sent in by David Gill, and it's from the Bournemouth Echo. Pod of dolphins stunned lucky sailors with their aquatic aerobatics on Saturday afternoon. Around 20 played in waters off sandbanks for an hour, delighting viewers. The same group could be spotted from Southbourne early that morning, where many walkers reported catching a glimpse of the animals as they strolled along the beach.
I've got one from that's been sent in from Callum Howie from the Dumfries Courier, which is a competition. Enter the Dumfries Courier reader competition and you could be the lucky winner to enjoy the full Monty service from The Hand Job, a local company with a range of services including car wash, valeting, dent and scratch removal, leather repairs, window tinting, etc., etc. And the question for this competition is, when is Ladies' Day at The Hand Job?
Yeah, I've got one from Stuart Munro in Musselburgh. It's from the Aberdeen Evening Express Digital Edition. Headline one, Aberdeen boy, 10, injured in attack involving 15 children. Headline two, Aberdeen mum, my 9-year-old son saved me from knife-wielding intruder. Headline three, Aberdeen student, elbowed man in face at nightclub. Headline four, Aberdeen, hailed as happiest place in Britain.
This was sent in by Alistair Cuthill. It is a sign from Grove Place Public Toilets in Falmouth, with a sign directly underneath that says, have you paid and displayed?
Let's take a look at the final scores. Camilla and Andy have got 14 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Andrew with 15. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from an article about environmentally friendly toilets spotted in the East Anglian Daily Times by Ian Cameron.
The toilets work without needing water, electricity or chemicals. Instead, natural energy from wind is used.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Jeremy Hardy, Andrew Maxwell, Camilla Long and Andy Hamilton. And the chair was Sandy Toksvig. And the news is read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Andy Walton and James Kettle, with additional material by Katie Mulgrew and Max Davis and Andrew Murray. The producer was Sam Michel.